Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Does your team feel pure joy when they come into work? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about how to create happiness in the workplace. But first, don't forget to visit leadx.org, that's O-R-G, where you'll find hundreds of articles from the best leadership and career experts out there. Visit leadx.org. Our guest today is the founder and CEO of Choose People, a company that transforms company cultures, increases employee happiness, and boosts the bottom line. She is the author of the new book, Culture Works, How to Create Happiness in the Workplace. Our guest is Chris Besh. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Chris, I am excited to talk about Culture Works in just a minute. But first, I always like to ask our guests, you know, can you share a time with us when you actually failed, maybe early in your career, you know, so that, what lessons did you learn? Because we want to learn from your failure, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all have those wonderful moments that we look back and we're like, really? And one of those for me was certainly early on when I started Choose People. And quite honestly, my failure was being too in love with my own idea. And so when I first started Choose People, I was really committed to creating a seal of approval that would say this product or service was made by happy employees. And I wanted to create like this consumer movement. And at the time, anyone that I would tell someone like my idea, they'd be like, oh, that's brilliant, which of course just made my ego around it that much bigger. And literally, it was probably a year and a half, Kevin, before I got a clue that while people thought it was a brilliant idea, no one was buying. Like, right. No one was interested because those organizations that had a great workplace culture were like, cool, no one knows of your seal of approval, right, aka right. No one cares. And then on the same token, those folks who were struggling with workplace culture were like, well, we can't get your seal. Like, can you help us? And at the time, I was really averse to being a consultant because you hear horrible things about consultants, about how they tell you the time of the day. And I was like, that's not going to be me. Not to mention that prior to starting Choose People, I ran a moving company. And, you know, I had one consultant that was extraordinary. And then I had probably five that similar. I was like, really? I can't believe I just paid you a chunk of cash. And so I spent a year and a half working on the wrong thing. And it wasn't until I was like, okay, well, what do people really need and what do they want? Where I switched my entire business model, that things started working. So I failed for about a year and a half. Like, it wasn't just a singular moment. And it was really just being attached to my own idea. I think that's the lesson learned, is sometimes you just think you're so brilliant. Yeah. And other people think you're so brilliant. Right. And it's like, but really, at the end of the day, are you making a difference? Are you helping people in addition to, you know, you have to have financial freedom and sustainability?
Chris, I love this story for a lot of reasons. I've had a small handful of businesses that have done well and had good exits and all that. But I also have a small handful of businesses that have failed that have cost me a lot of money. And All those times where I have failed, it's when I was so sure I had a great idea. And yep. You like took me back to these painful moments in my own life. I'm like, yeah, you know, I had a good idea. Everyone told me it was a good idea. And then you said the key thing, but nobody was handing over money for that idea. Right. So that's the ultimate proof of whether it's sustainable or not. But I'm going to ask a follow-up on this, because you sort of stuck to it for a year and a half. And I think a lot of people, I don't know the answer to this. I mean, so how do you know when it's like, oh, you just have to persevere and you never give up and you just have to outlast everybody and stay true to your passion, all that stuff, versus you got to understand that you can't fall in love with your own idea and now is the time to pivot. Like, how did you know, or what advice would you give people? Like, should you stick it out longer with your idea, or is it time to move on to something else?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Kevin. I think there's a piece that's so key that I think you do have passion. I think you do persevere in what it is that you're up to in the world, but the how side of it, or the venue and how you accomplish that, that's where you really have to listen to what people are wanting and what they're asking for from you. And so it was probably, and again, I wish it hadn't been the 10th time. I wish it had been the third time. So it would have been, you know, 6 months in rather than a year and a half in.
Right.
That I really would have listened when, you know, I was in front of a potential client and they're like, great, but here's my concern, or here's what I'd like, or here's what I want, or can you help us with this? Anytime someone's like, can you help us with this? Like, that should just be a huge, you know, like big light of like, this is what the market needs. This is what people want. And if it's in alignment with what you're up to in the world, well, why wouldn't you go down that venue and go down that path, as compared to just being, you know, really committed to doing it exactly the way you thought it should be done? The how isn't nearly as important, as long as at the end of the day, you're still accomplishing what it was that you wanted to create.
Yeah, I think that's the genius right there, right? You're still true. I mean, you're still focused on creating happy workplaces and getting people happier at work. It's, you know, your ultimate mission, why didn't change, but how you're going to accomplish it is what you need to be a little bit more flexible on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just listening, right? I don't think I listened. I wasn't listening. I was too attached and married to my own idea.
So Chris, your new book is Culture Works, How to Create Happiness in the Workplace. And this was interesting to me. You know, your own journey into this whole workplace culture stuff started when you became the CEO of a moving company. And when you got there, you write in your book that it was performing, you know, poorly. You had some work to do to turn it around. So take me back. I mean, how did you get that job? What were signs that things weren't going as well as they could? And then when did you choose, like, how did you decide, okay, this part of my life and career is over, I'm going to jump out and do something else?
Yeah, great questions. So the way I got the job, it was kind of happenstance. So I was working in another city. I met my to-be husband, my fiance, and he lived in another city. And it was one of those things, we had to make a decision. And so I moved to live where he was living, and he was running this moving company. And he's like, I was like, well, I got to look for a job. And he's like, well, why don't you help me out, you know, until you find a job.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I can do that. And the prior job that I had left had to do with really helping leaders make progress in social issues, whether it was like education, or we actually dealt with things between like US and Russia and all sorts of mediation. It was fascinating work, but it wasn't one that could travel with me at the time. And so I came to the moving company, and literally on the first day, I mean, people were yelling obscenities at each other. Wow. And not in that like yo-yo we're tight way. Like, I hate your guts, and, you know, fists are going to start flying. And it wasn't, I probably was there less than a month when it became really evident that, and you know, here you're in a relationship, my fiance is struggling to figure out how to cover payroll, and the Department of Transportation was upset. And long story short, it was just a cluster.
Yeah.
And he's my ex-husband now, right? It all gets very complicated.
Yeah, sure. Life happens.
And the man grew the business and really cares about people, cared about the work, knows how to do moving backwards and forwards, but he didn't know the infrastructure. He didn't have the infrastructure in place, which included management, which includes, you know, culture and those types of pieces. And so I was like, okay, I don't have money. I don't have time. And yet we got to get this figured out. Like, this isn't, like, this is toxic, and we got to figure out how to pay payroll.
Well, this feeds right into my next question, because so you've set this up perfectly. Like, wow, it's like you've got operational difficulties. You don't need a workplace survey when people are cursing each other out to know that there's, you know, culture problems. And you're coming in from the outside, which I thought is interesting. And so, you know, from what I've read and heard, and it'd be interesting to see if you agree or not. I mean, before you can do anything, you sort of have to establish trust. Like, they need to be able to trust you. And I would have to think they see you coming in from the outside. Has she ever worked in moving before? Who is this person? So what were those early steps to establish trust, which I'm assuming had to happen before things started turning around?
Right. Absolutely. So the first thing I would say, to establish trust, the first thing you have to do is trust. And I know that sounds a little bit trite, but it's absolutely true, because we trust people who trust us. And if you think about it, we don't trust people who don't. And so it was one of those things that I came in and I was like, okay, these are all, for the most part, it wasn't always, but it was mostly young men. And part of it was figuring out, okay, how do I get them plugged into their own sense of pride around the work that they're doing? And first off is just admitting to, like, you guys, I don't know anything about moving. I know absolutely nothing about moving, but here's what I do know. What I do know is that when people are moving, they're going through one of the most difficult transitions in their life. And like, if you throw in like a divorce, if you throw in death, like it's really, really hard. And here you come along and you take all of their worldly possessions, put them in your truck, and you drive away. Right. And like, people are not on their best behavior when they're moving. They're really stressed out. And so I was like, you have to understand that while you might just be like, oh, I'm just here to get a paycheck, or I just got to clock in, like what you're up to in the world is actually pretty important, because you're helping people through one of the most difficult transitions in their life. Like, and you are literally providing, you know, peace of mind all in one piece. And it was one of these pieces where they started taking more pride in their work. And then the second thing I did is I set up expectations. I'm like, listen, if you no call, no show, that's the thing, right, where you're supposed to go out on a job, you don't call, you don't let us know that you're not going to be able to make it, we're floundering trying to get people, like, you don't have a job here. Mm-hmm. Like, we've got really clear expectations of what it means to be part of this team. And like, there's a certain level, if you just let people run willy-nilly, then anyone can be part of the team. And then there isn't that pride, as compared to being like, you have to be a high performer and you have to care, and you can't, like, you can't, like, it's a character and competency thing. Like, you've got to have the character to be on this team where you respect people and you're enjoyable to work with, and you have to have the competency, you have to have the skills, you have to have the knowledge, and granted, we'll train you and all that. But at the end of the day, you can't just be anybody to be on this team. So we really plugged into the pride piece. And then I also just really was like, I believe in you guys, like, you got this, we can make this happen. Like, we're in a tough time, but like, let's galvanize and figure this out and like come together and make it happen. And I know that sounds a little bit cheesy, but there is just this, like, we're all on the same team wearing the same jersey, like, stop spitting in each other's faces, because that certainly doesn't help. And let's talk about like where some of that's coming from. So that's where I started. It was messy.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I was taking notes on a lot of, you hit a lot in that answer. And it's interesting. What really resonated with me is about explaining and making sure everybody understood the importance of their work and that they're helping people who are at a, often at a difficult transition point in their life. And, you know, I did a talk for one of the storage companies called CubeSmart. And yeah, before I went to CubeSmart, I've never used that kind of storage myself. I didn't know anything about that industry. And I'm thinking, you know, why are they interested in leadership and engagement? And like, I just didn't see the fit. And man, I mean, I spent half a day with them, their CEO, executives, and a lot of their managers, and it changed my life. And what really moved me was how many of them said the same thing. They said, hey, listen, Kevin, you know, people think, okay, you know, you show up, we take their money, we give you a lock, and that's all it is. They said, sometimes people are coming to CubeSmart for additional storage for a good reason, but usually it's for a bad reason, right? You know, they're getting evicted, they're moving, they lost whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they really felt that they were in service of, and could be of help and aid and service to so many people who are at a tough point in their life. And so they really tapped into that why. And I'm glad to hear you said the same thing, because sometimes I get challenged from people who say like, oh, you know, you're telling me that anybody can be happy at work or engaged at work. What about sanitation workers? What about bus drivers? What about janitors? Yes, they can be. And I've met many of them who love their job and usually feel that they're really serving a greater purpose than what their specific task might be that day.
Absolutely.
So the other thing that I think is interesting about your turnaround work there is, you know, it's one thing to drive engagement in a large organization where, you know, often people will feel more happy or engaged if they're growing, learning new things, they're advancing in their career. That's like a big driver. In a small organization, often there's not as much room for growth and advancement. The whole future vision and like having a big, hairy, audacious goal, like Jim Collins likes to say. Well, in a big company, they'll say, hey, we'll double our revenue in 10 years. And whether they do it or not, who knows? But in a small company, sometimes they don't really want to grow. They just want to stay the same size and be profitable. So what are your thoughts from your own experience or other ideas on, you know, what are the challenges or what are the solutions for creating a happy workplace in a smaller company that doesn't have some of these advantages of the bigger companies?
Let me answer that twofold. One is, I think if you're a smaller company and you're not looking to grow, I think that's that's one piece that I want to talk to here real quickly. But most small companies, I mean, you're constantly growing, like whether you want to or not, right? If you're successful. And so the people on your team are constantly learning and they're constantly challenged and they're having to wear multiple hats. But I think going to your point of kind of like there isn't this, oh, I can get promoted, you know, up three rings, right, you know, up the ladder, if you will. For me, I actually think it's easier to have an extraordinary workplace culture in a smaller organization simply because you touch your people more. Like you're more, as the leader of the organization, you're in touch with your people just that much more. And so for me, whether you're in a small organization or a large organization, at the end of the day, your employees want to feel like they're known, where like you genuinely know who they are and what they're about. They want to feel like their work matters and their contribution matters and it makes an impact, and that they want to feel included, like they belong, they're part of the team, right? They're not on the outside, they're in the inner circle, if you will. And I think that can easily, I actually think that's almost easier to accomplish in a smaller organization simply because there's fewer of you, there's a little bit less complexity. Like you're just more likely to know like their kids' names and right, like kind right. of, and you might have that in a department within a larger company, but it's not like the CEO of, you know, that's right. got 5,000 people can possibly know all those different pieces. As a smaller company, I actually don't think it's more challenging. I actually think it's a little bit easier. I think you have to be more on top of it, because the good news is that as a smaller company, you can be more nimble. It also means things like you have one person who is not happy, like it can take the whole team down. Whereas if you're in a larger company, you're a little bit more insulated. It might be affecting a singular department, but not necessarily the whole company.
Yeah, you just, Chris, revealed what I think is a ninja trick for or almost like a Jedi mind trick for leaders. And I'm going to talk about it. I'm not suggesting people do it in a purely manipulative way, but you talk about knowing your team members, their kids' names. And I was, you know, at an event asking about as an activity, like, hey, who was your best boss ever? Who was your worst boss ever? And what made your bad boss a bad boss? And I expected to hear things like, I don't know, you know, is always yelling at me or micromanaging or all this stuff. And what came back over and over again was, I worked for him for 5 years. He didn't even know the names of my kids. And that, when I first heard, I'm like, wow, I never really asked the question before. And I'm getting a lot of these answers that basically said he or she didn't care about me, you know, didn't take the time to know about my hobbies or my kids. And I think that's fundamental. I mean, if you're listeners, if you're a team leader and you don't know the name of the spouses, significant others, or kids of the people that work for you, you know, put some time and effort into that, because I mean, it's a sign that you care and you should care. And if you don't know, I mean, they know how much you know about them. And so, Chris, good point. I mean, in a smaller organization, it is easier to get that sense of belonging, right?
Absolutely. I think it's a lot easier. I always say kind of emotional intimacy is the secret ingredient to having an extraordinary workplace culture. And I just think that's easier to do with a smaller team. It's still possible with a larger team. It's just a little bit easier just because you're interacting more on a daily basis.
All right. Now I'm going to do a follow-up on this that we didn't prep for either. So emotional intimacy. What are you talking about, Chris? I was told, oh, you're the boss. You got to stay objective. You can't get close to your people. What if you have to reprimand them? What if you have to fire them? So how do you respond to that?
So I'm a big believer, like clearly if someone's not a good fit in your organization because you care about the impact on the rest of your team, like you have to do what you need to do in order to set that person free, right? Like you can't just keep them on your team, but that doesn't mean you don't get to care about them. We still care about the people that we fire, right? That doesn't preclude that. And then actually, I would say you're a lot more likely to have success and helping someone turn around, you know, either, again, a character flaw or a competency flaw, where you're helping them in an area where they're struggling. If you are connected with them, if they do know that you're coming from a place of caring, that you do understand who they are and how they contribute, as compared to if they're like, this guy doesn't even know me, or doesn't even like really understand what I do on a day-to-day basis, or doesn't know the results that I have come up with. So I think they actually go hand in hand. I think you're going to have a lot more success in dismissing someone with dignity if they understand that it's not like you didn't know them. It's not like you didn't see their work and saw where they were having success and see where they were struggling. I mean, the worst thing you can do is keep someone on your team who's not performing because you're trying to be nice, right? That's, I always just say, like, that's unkind niceness. Like, you're not doing anyone any favors. Just imagine, right? Like, you show up every single day to your job and you don't do it well. Right. It's just not within your wheelhouse. Like, you've got training, you've tried, like, you've done everything you know to do, and your team keeps counting on you and you just can't hit it. Like, it is a kindness to say to that person, like, this is like, let's, you got to find another opportunity.
Yeah. And listeners, again, put yourself in the position of being the one who's getting fired. Would you rather be fired by some, you know, cold-hearted robot or person, mm-hmm. stranger from HR, or from your team leader who genuinely cares about you and says, hey, listen, this isn't working out, as you know, and we got to, you know, move you out. But here's what we're going to do to make sure you land on your feet. Here's what we're going to do to help you in the transition. Here's what I'm personally going to do over the next 7 days, 30 days, 3 months to help you out in every way I can. I mean, I'd take the caring side any day.
Yeah. And where they know your strengths, right? Where they can come back and say, okay, you may not be having success here, but let's find out where you could.
Right. So the other thing is, I'm big on recognition as well, for workplace culture, for driving mm-hmm. happiness and engagement at work. So, you know, and you write a lot about recognition. You know, what type of recognition programs, you know, work best in your experience? What do you recommend to your clients?
So I tend to not recommend programs overall. If you want to go the program route so that you have the structure in place.
I'm not going to force you.
right. Just if you're going to go for the recognition program, have it be a peer-to-peer program where coworkers are recognizing other coworkers. But the type of recognition that I think is most valuable is, one, recognizing people when they go above and beyond. You know, you have those managers who they say thank you so often and for every single thing that when they say thank you, it doesn't mean a whole lot. And then you have the managers who are like, oh, I don't need kudos. And so they don't think anyone else does.
Right.
But people genuinely like to be witnessed when they've made an extra effort. And so when your employees go above and beyond, or they're innovative, or, you know, they do a behavior that you'd like to see more of in your entire team, there's an opportunity for you to go to that person in the moment. Timeliness is important. Verbal is important. Face-to-face, if you can make it happen. And let them know what it meant to you. Like, be really specific about what it was that they did and be like, oh my gosh, because you did that, like, we're not going to lose that account. Because you did that, like, I'm able to sleep better at night. Because you did that, like, I was able to go to my kid's soccer game and not have to stress about it. Like, I am so appreciative to have you on my team and know that you're in my corner. I mean, that's the type of appreciation that's meaningful as compared to, and again, I have to really watch myself because I'm so tempted to just be like, you're the bomb diggity, right? And just like, look good, or be like, you're great, as compared to really getting specific about what it is that they've done that I appreciate and that I've seen, right? Like, that I actually witnessed. And I'm a big believer in doing it one-on-one rather than in a public setting, because there's a good chance that someone else on your team did something equally fabulous that you just don't know about. The only time I would go for the public is if you are trying to change a behavior in your team, or if it's that team member's anniversary. I think that's a great time to really get to call out, like, on the work anniversary, is to really acknowledge that person in front of the rest of the team and everything that they contribute. I think there's a lot to be said for just that day-to-day witnessing, again, of the successes and the struggles, and when they're having success, calling it out, and when they're struggling, inquiring what's going on and how you can support them.
Wow. Chris, you just threw a wrench into my brain on this recognition stuff, and I didn't expect it, because I usually say, you know, do the recognition in public, like at your weekly huddle or whatever, because when you mention the behavior that you're recognizing, it sends a signal to everybody, like, you know, this is what good looks like. This is what gets recognized. This is a valued behavior. However, you bring up a really good point that often public recognition will demotivate someone else who didn't get the recognition, because it's sort of like, well, why didn't I get recognized when I did that, or something like that. In fact, I often say I hate those employee of the month things or CEO right. clubs, because the winner circle is so small. Like, if you're the winner, hey, that's great. But the 99% of other employees who didn't win, a good chunk of them might be like, well, how I think I should was as good as that person. How come I didn't get employee of the month or CEO club or something? So I got to think about that's really interesting that even a smaller behavioral thing, you could be demotivating someone in on your team because you may have missed or overlooked a similar behavior.
Well, and Kevin, I'm in agreement with you if you're wanting a change of behavior on your team.
Okay.
So for example, you know, you'll have managers who are like, I've got an open door policy, but like nobody tells me anything and I'm the last one to hear, or, you know, they hear from their supervisor about how they need to do things differently with their team. And they're like, why didn't my team come to me directly? And so that's, if you're wanting to change behavior, for example, if you're wanting your team to come to you directly about concerns that they have, either about how you manage or about other issues that are happening, then when someone does give you literally a breadcrumb, you just want to come to your team publicly and pretend it's like a whole loaf and be like, I really want to acknowledge so-and-so for bringing this to my attention, that I use all caps in emails. And when I do, you guys think I'm yelling at you and I'm going to do my best because that's not what I'm trying to do. Like, I was just trying to underscore how important something was, you know, or if you have a team that's consistently late, right? You can call someone out and be like, I really want to acknowledge so-and-so for being on time because that honors all of our efforts. And I really would like to see that more from our entire team, right? So I see using that public praise if you're wanting to shift a behavior on your team.
Yeah, that's great. And listeners, the other thing that Chris said, great language. You know, she says that they like to be witnessed, you know, when they go above and beyond. And I think that's a really interesting way to phrase it. And as close to the time as possible of when that behavior, that above and beyond happened. I've heard more than one people sort of adopt the TSA slogan of see something, say something, but it's a good idea for giving recognition or coaching, you know, when necessary, your team members. Chris, people can tell, really fun, interesting conversation. I encourage everybody to get your book to learn more about your own journey at the moving company and the work that you've done, how to create happy workplaces. But before we wrap up, you know, I always like to challenge our listeners to get a little bit better every day. We've covered a lot of ground, but to help them anchor some of this, to remember our conversation, what's something they can take action on today, like right away? Challenge us with something.
So the one thing that you could take action on today with your team is to connect the mission to the money and the money to the mission. And what I mean by that is if you have, so again, ran the moving company, I'd have one guy that was making $13 an hour, another guy that was making $12. This is back in 2007. I'd be charging $100 an hour and they'd be thinking like, really? Boss lady is walking away with like $75. Like she's, you know, she's got gold bricks in her basement. And it was one of those things where I had to really share with them how we made and how we spent and how we saved money. And I did this whole kind of $100 tool in which I would share with them how the money comes into the organization and where we spend it. And I'd get $101 bills and I'd do a flip chart and I'd do it in percentages. And I'd be like, okay, you know, you're my rent, you're my marketing, you're my insurance. And I would hand the money out and I would do payroll last. And I'd say, and like, this is what we have at the end of the day. And that's like to pay debt. And that's to pay, you know, if we want to do raises, if we want to buy new trucks. And there was just this whole like, oh my gosh, like that's where the money goes. No, she's not lining her basement with gold bricks. And there was just all of a sudden this awareness of like how we made our money and how we spent it in a way that they wouldn't necessarily know because they're not running a business. But within that, I would let them know, listen, to want money and to want to grow and to increase our revenue is not a greed factor. It comes from our desire to expand our mission. The more money we have, the more people we can serve. The more people we serve, the more money we have. Like money is just energy that helps us expand on our mission and what it is that we're up to in the world and how they feed one another. Because again, if you've got someone, depending on their background, if there's a little bit of that poverty mindset, there can be some concern of like, oh, to want money is greedy. And when you're talking about growth and all your people are hearing are these numbers that you're wanting to hit, they have to really understand. You're like, no, let me share with you why we want to hit those numbers. Let me tell you what that makes possible for us. And then at the same token, kind of do that open book sharing where they can really understand like, okay, these are the verticals. This is, you know, this is how we get our $100 into our organization. You know, $30 comes from national moves, $30 comes from local moves, or where, you know, whatever your revenue streams are, and then how it goes out and which of those pieces they can impact. And, you know, because my guys would come back and be like, oh my gosh, like I can help with truck repairs and I can help with not forgetting a moving blanket, you know, because that's $12 and that's 2 hours of profit. So there's a lot. Just make sure you're always communicating the why behind the numbers and the money. Like, I don't think that gets connected often enough.
This is great. And I, with my previous companies, you know, I've always practiced open book management. And what you just shared, though, is really critical for those who think they're practicing open book management is if you haven't trained or educated your team members in sort of how to make sense of the books, just because you send out a summary P&L doesn't mean you're doing open book management. They don't know how to read it. They don't know what the numbers mean. So this really interactive, engaging, visceral exercise that you did, Chris, is a good idea. But I'm curious, so it's really clear if you're a small, mid-sized company, open book, show where the money's going and how it connects to the mission. What if I'm running the safety department of some giant automobile company or something? Would you say that I should be doing that exercise for my team, but like at the company level, like here's how our company makes money and all the rest? Or is it more like our team budget? Hey, we got a $5 million budget this year and let's look at where that goes.
I think it should be both. I think you have leadership, top leadership, do it for the entire company. I mean, and they literally could do a video of themselves if they're not able to be in 100 places at once. Like, right. I get that. And then certainly do it for your department. Like, this is our budget and this is where we're looking to spend it. These are the initiatives we're trying to make happen. And based off of those, this is where that money's going.
Brilliant. Chris, what's the best way our listeners can find out more about you and your work?
So again, our company is choosepeople.com. So you can always go there. But then right now, as you mentioned, I've got a new book out called Culture Works. And so if you go to cultureworksbook.com/VIP, and sign up for our weekly culture tip, which we always try to give you really innovative concepts and tangible tools to take to your team to create an extraordinary workplace culture. And just because you're a LeadX listener, if you put that /VIP, we'll also include you in this month's drawing for a free Culture Works book and how to create happiness in the workplace. And along with it, the workbook, which together is like $200 value.
Awesome. Thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you.
So friends, you've just been mentored by the great Chris Besh. Don't forget, you can get the links she mentioned and notes from this interview over at leadx.org. You can get Culture Works from amazon.com or your favorite bookstore. And listeners, don't forget, hop on up to iTunes if you haven't already done it. Search up LeadX, hit subscribe, leave a short, honest review. It would mean the world to me. Until next time, remember, leadership is about influence, not authority. We are all leaders. The question is, what kind of leader will you be?